All right. The name of today's sermon is Anamana. Anamana. This is a word that only my parents and I would know, because I've been saying that word since I could talk. Anamana. You will learn more about that to come. The scriptures we're going to talk about today, it's going to be Exodus 15, 16, 17. I'm going to throw in 32 and Numbers 11. So I don't expect you to follow along on everything. Some of it I'll read the verses to you. And some of it I'm just going to kind of gloss over and summarize what happened. When the Israelites left Egypt, they were, what were they when they were in Egypt? They were slaves, right? They were slaves. They were owned by other people. They had become slaves over 400 years because of the drought that had occurred in all the lands. Do you guys remember Joseph? Remember the story of Joseph, the one with the coat of many colors? He got sold as a slave, and then he became a slave to somebody, and then he went into the jail, and then he became Pharaoh's right-hand man. And even though his brothers sold him into slavery, he had said, what you meant for evil, God is going to use for good. If you've ever heard that, that's where it comes from. And he did that, and Pharaoh had a dream, and he explained it, and Joseph was able to tell him what the dream meant. He says, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And what you need to do is you need to gather up all the excess grain over the years of plenty, and then you'll have that and be able to sell it back to the people over the next 7 years. So that's what they did. So during the 7 years that went bad, little by little, the people who lived in all the surrounding areas came and moved to Egypt, and they would buy grain because Egypt was the only one who had it. Well, then they ran out of money. So then they started saying, well, you can have my sheep or my goats. Then they ran out of their belongings, and they said, well, you can have our land. And after that, they actually sold themselves to Egypt as slaves so they would not starve to death. And so Egypt would provide all their food, and the Israelites would provide the labor. So when you get to Exodus and you get to the story of Moses, this is how the Israelites got into this position anyways. And it's been 400 years since Joseph. Okay? The people have not kept up learning about God. They really don't remember much. And all the people of Joseph's era have died out. So basically, they're people who know they're Jews, are not really into it. They know their history, but they live in an Egyptian culture, and that's the culture they live by. Moses comes in, and God speaks to Moses, and I won't go into all the story of his history. But Moses is called to lead the people out of Israel. Why is he to do this? Because it said that the Israelites were crying out to God in the midst of their slavery for a redeemer, for someone to come and deliver them out of the oppressive hands of Egypt. Moses was the one who was raised up. Now, you can imagine a slave's life is probably not fabulous, but their kind of slaves in Egypt weren't like the horrible, the worst kind that you can have. They could really eat as much as they wanted because Egypt was the place where all of the food was. But they could be beaten, they could be killed, they could be anything at any time. They were not owned by themselves. All right, everybody with me on where this starts. So Moses comes in, takes them out, takes them through the Red Sea. Pharaoh comes after them. All the horses and chariots are drowned in the sea. And they move off. Now, they have just seen God do plagues and locusts and frogs and all sorts of stuff. They've seen God drown an entire army in the Red Sea. And the very next thing they do, Exodus 15, Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, They could not drink its water because it was bitter. That's why the place is called Marah. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, what are we to drink? Now, granted, they've just seen everything else that's happened, wild and crazy things. God proving that he was the God of the universe. And now they want something to drink. They start complaining and grumbling. Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. He threw it in the water, and the water became fit to drink. Then the Lord issued a ruling, an instruction for them, and put them to the test. Let's say that again. The Lord issued a ruling and instruction for them and put them to the test. He said, if you listen carefully to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Now, right after that, the next thing they do is they go out into another place, and the whole community starts grumbling and complaining again. This time, they say, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. What caused them to grumble the first time?
Water.
Drink. What's causing them to grumble the second time? Food. So the Lord said, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. Now listen, he gave particular instructions. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they're to gather twice as much. They're to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. But it also says that God said, you are not to gather on the seventh day. There will not be any. So, guess what happened? Oh, and also, you only gather enough for that day. No extra, none to carry over. Most of the people obeyed. Some did not. Those who carried over and tried holding over more than they could eat in one day, it stank and maggots started coming out of them. All right? And also, God said, if you get twice as much on the sixth day, on the seventh day, it won't stink, won't have maggots, and you can eat it. And that's what happened. He said, don't go anywhere. Don't go out of your house to go get anything for yourself. Stay in your house. There won't be any. Some people still got out and went looking for the stuff. Now, God said, I made these rulings because I'm going to test you. I mean, he could have had 3 days worth on the fifth day or the fourth day and just let them eat that for 3 days. He did things specifically to see and test their hearts to see if they would obey, if they would listen and obey. You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bless you. Now, in Numbers 11, after they'd been eating manna for all this time, they said, they began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. What are they grumbling and complaining about again? Food? Food. Now they said, with no cost. They ate all this stuff with no cost. Is that really true?
No.
What were they paying for it with?
Sales.
Their lives. It wasn't free. They didn't sit around all day and do nothing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Lord said, I'll give you meat. I'll give it to you until it comes out your nostrils and you loathe it. Because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wailed before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? You with me?
Mm-hmm.
So he gave them a month's worth of quail. But while the meat was still between their teeth and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place was called Kibroth Hatava, because there they buried the people who had craved other foods. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
These are people who had been slaves. They have now been set free. But they want to go back and be slaves so they can eat and drink. Sound pretty stupid?
Crazy.
Crazy? Illogical? All right. Now starts the sermon. When I was little, I used to have a couple of phrases because I couldn't say things. One of them was fa-fies. Anybody want to guess what fa-fies was?
French fries.
French fries. I must have wanted French fries a lot because I said that.
Fa-fies?
Fa-fies. Fa-fies.
Okay.
I had one other word, though, that I said a lot, and it was anamana. Now, when my son was little, when he was upset, he used to go, money, money. I never figured out what that meant. You know, he's like a year old. Money. Well, I would say, anamana. This is what I would say. Anamana. What am I saying? Anamana.
Anamana.
Mama loves you.
Oh, my mom?
Nope. Penny, go to your room. Anamana.
Anamana.
Take your hands off the table. Anamana.
In a minute.
Go to bed.
I don't want
to. Anamana. I don't want to. I don't want to. Anamana. Anamana. This sermon is called Anamana. Because I've been saying that since I was a child. It means I don't want to. I don't want to leave the playground. I don't want to go to bed. I don't want to eat that. Anamana. This past week, God brought me face to face with some issues in my life. And I really heard him say enough in a very, very strong tone. He wasn't angry at me, but it was a disciplinary tone. It was a very strong enough. You ever dealt with a child or another person who has just kind of lost control? And you have to almost shake them and go, stop, get a hold of yourself. Enough. We do that when we go in, when we get angry sometimes, or we have a pity party, something like that. We get distracted or consumed or compelled by something. Somebody has to come in and break it off and say, enough. That's what God said. I have been complaining to him about my weight loss. You know about this. And it had been making me so crazy. I'm dealing with it in Celebrate Recovery at this point. But my issue is less the weight loss than my absolute OCD compulsion obsession with my weight loss, how fast it is, what's happening. Now, it had become beyond sanity. Literally, I was giving myself panic attacks because no matter what I did, I could not make the weight come off faster. Now, I have been very, very, very frustrated. People doing the HCG diet, having stomach surgery, these are things I've said, God, can I do? And he has made it clear, without a shadow of a doubt, I am not to do those things. I don't know about you guys, but I can hear when God says no. Sometimes I run roughshod right over it, but I can hear when he says no. So I've been so jealous about the other people. God, why can they do that and lose 15 pounds or 20 pounds in 3 weeks or 70 pounds, 50 pounds in a month? Why can't I do that? And I was making myself sick. I had to take a panic pill. That's how bad I was making myself. Everyone has a different reason, too, for why I'm not losing weight. You know, some people are saying, well, it's because you're not eating enough. Other people, well, you're eating too much. Well, you're not eating it in small enough increments at certain times of the day. Oh, you're eating on regular intervals. Everybody's got a reason and a way. Oh, you're eating fruit. Oh, you're not eating enough balance. Right? Everybody's got their opinion, and I'm trying to figure out which one of their stinking opinions is going to fix my issue. Right? Now, I can hear God. He did tell me back in June that I was to get rid of the sugars, the breads, and the desserts, which I've done since June 2014. During the fast, he told me
to stop eating starches and stop eating grains. I said, well, okay, I can do that for 3 weeks. I'm okay. I said, just 3 weeks, right, God? Dead silence. So I finished the 3 weeks, and God said, I want you to keep doing that. And I went, well, what, for like a month? Well, maybe 6 months? Year. Year, huh? Still not hearing anything. Basically, when God tells you to do something, you do it until he tells you to stop. When in doubt, do the last thing God tells you to do. If you don't know, if he hasn't changed your direction, you keep doing what he's told you to do. And I'm like, okay. He says, I want you to just not eat them anymore. Guess what my answer was?
Anamana.
Anamana. I complained to God. I said, I'm swimming 2 to 3 hours a week. You know, why am I not losing this weight? And God said, I don't want you to swim an hour, 2 to 3 times a week. He says, I want you to only swim half an hour and swim it every day that you possibly can. Only half an hour. I said, but God, I'm too tired. I get really tired. I'm too tired to do it every day. Anamana. Anamana. God said, okay, then go to sleep earlier. This is literally the conversation we had. He says, I want you in bed by 10, and so you can try and be asleep by 10:30. I get up at 6:30 in the morning, 6 or 6:30. I said, but then I can't watch Netflix as many consecutive episodes as I want. Anamana. Everything he said to me, anamana. What does anamana really mean? I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it. Right? And that's when God said, enough. I'm tired of your complaining and not doing what I tell you to fix what you are complaining about. You complain and you say you want to lose weight, but you refuse to do what I tell you to do simply because you don't want to do it. You want to do what you want to do and not do what you don't want to do because of how you feel or don't feel. And still get everything you want. It doesn't work that way. So I asked God, okay, if I do the stuff that you're telling me, this was the kicker, will I lose more than half to 1 pound a week? And he said, no. You are to do this simply because I told you to do this. Ever had a parent say, just because I said so? You are to do this simply because I told you to do this, because it is good for you. You are to obey me and do this, even if you don't get what you want from it when you want it. And then he said this. This fast and this exercise regimen has absolutely nothing to do with your weight loss. It has to do with your discipline, your health, and me changing you into someone who actually becomes more like my son in thought, action, and intention. Someone who obeys for obedience's sake. And by the way, it is not a diet for a month, a year, or even 2 years. This is what I want you to do for the rest of your life. Discipline and change happens over a long period of time, and I want to change you, not your weight. Everything we normally do is because we're trying to achieve something. There is a goal. We get something in return. We think of God that way too. God, if I do this, you'll do this for me. Right? But the truth is, we do what God says simply because God says do it. But we say, anamana. Anamana, do that. I don't want to cut that out. I don't want to go the extra mile. I don't want to do that. I don't feel like it. I'm not going to get what I want out of it. And so I add the butt wag and shoulder. Anamana. Right? Just have a bigger temper tantrum. And this is what we do with God. I'm not getting what I want, so I'm going to complain that I'm not getting it, that I'm still sick, that I'm still overweight, that I'm still poor, that I'm still whatever it is, and I'm not going to do what God tells me to do because I'm a mama. It's not what I want to do. It's not how I wanted to make it. It's not going to be fast enough. It's not going to be it's not going to be cheap enough. It's not going to be whatever enough. When God says do it, he says do it. Because he said so. There is no, if I get this, I'll do this. Mm-hmm. I was stunned. And then he said, welcome to advanced discipleship. Swear. This is what he said. Welcome to advanced discipleship. Obeying simply because I said so. Obeying for obedience's sake. Obeying because that is what I ask of you, regardless of what the results will be. Obeying despite how you feel. Obeying so you become truly disciplined in every area of your life. And I can use you and trust you in areas I couldn't do so before. I'll say that again. Obeying so you can become truly disciplined in every area of your life. And I can use you and trust you in areas I couldn't do so before. Remember how God gave the Israelites pieces of instructions to test them to see what they would do? Right? Little bits of discipline. Let me see if you can do this. If you can do this, then I can entrust you with this. And if you do this, then I can entrust you with this. Discipline builds upon itself. Discipline is actually its own reward. Because it enables you to do more. How can God use us if all our decisions are based on how we feel and what we want? Can he trust us to actually do what he tells us when he knows the moment that our food or our drink is not pleasing to us, we're going to go off and have a hissy fit and want to go back to Egypt, back to our slavery? Think of the things that we give into that destroy us, that make us sick, that hurt us, that we do because we didn't get what we wanted and because we felt like it. Doing what we feel like is killing us. Some literally. The smoking, the drugs will kill us. The overeating. You eat enough, you become diabetic. Other things, your high cholesterol, the heart. The whole point is God does actually know best. God does want to take care of us and everything that's important to us. But if we are not disciplined enough to do what he asks us, even in the small things, how will he ever do big things in us, through us, or for us? He's saying enough of the bargaining, enough of the complaining, enough of not doing things or doing things according to how I felt or didn't feel. He had a one-word response to my anamana. And the word is shama. Shama is the Hebrew word, which means listen and obey. That's it. It says, and the word is sometimes translated in the Old Testament as hear, but it's not just to listen. It's to hear and obey. If you've got a child or you were a child and the parent tells the child, go clean your room. The child heard. Child didn't do. Did they really hear? No. In Shema, you listen with the intent and the follow through and you obey. That's truly listening. I listened to them. I did what they said. The answer to anamana, shema, listen and obey. But what gets in the way of shema? Anamana. Right? It's like he said, stop acting like a child because I'm not going to treat you like a child anymore. I expect from you grown-up attitudes, thoughts, and actions. I expect you to listen and obey. Now, some of us have been in the Lord a long time. He's not going to treat us like children anymore. He will. When we say, well, I want quail, he's going to go, that's fine. You want to go back to slavery or you want your quail, that's fine. While it's in your mouth, it's going to make you sick. You want to give up freedom. You want to give up power. You want to give up being under the dominion of a God who can do anything and take care of you and loves you and will use you in his kingdom in order to go back to what's easy, the path of least resistance. In Israel, God rescued them from slavery in Egypt to bring them to a land of milk and honey. What he didn't mention was that they were going to have to fight to get that land of milk and honey because it would currently belong to somebody else. And then they were going to have to fight to keep the land of milk and honey. So here we have slaves coming out of Egypt. How are these slaves? What were they trained in? Were they trained in war? Mm-hmm. They weren't trained in anything. They were trained to just do whatever the Egyptians told them. Take straw, make bricks. That's what the Israelites did. So how in the world were they going to get to their promised land from the first place? How were they going to take it? How were they going to keep it? They're a bunch of slaves that are used to making bricks and going home and eating. How is this going to happen? That's why a journey that should have taken a week took 40 years. The distance from the promised land to Egypt is like 7 days. But God was not concerned with the quickest way to get them from Egypt to the promised land. He was concerned with them being the people who could take, live in, and protect the land that they want to go to. You follow? There's another reason. God has a place and a purpose for each one of us. Could he pick us up, drop us in that situation immediately? Absolutely. Would we flub it up fabulously? Yeah. Why? Because like the Egyptians, we would have the mindset of who we are now. It took 40 years for him to change the Israelites from slaves to soldiers so they could take what was rightfully theirs and keep it. For what God needs and wants for us, the part we play in his kingdom and his will, he can't leave us as we are. You understand? He has to change us so that we can get what it is he has for us. That's why it may take us 40 years to fulfill the will of God. But everything he's doing now, it's the little things, testing them. Will you gather food for 6 days, twice as much on the sixth day, and not go looking for it on the seventh? That's the beginning. When you go to basic training in the army, what do you do? Whatever you're told. Doesn't matter. Does it? What you're told to do. You do whatever you're told. And that's how you're trained. And as you get more and more disciplined to do what you're told, you're entrusted with more important things, right? It's the exact same way with our Christian life. Now notice that the slaves in Egypt, the adults in that generation, never saw the promised land. They were the ones who were grumbling and complaining and wanted to go back to Egypt. They'd rather be in slavery and live according to a happy flesh than have freedom and have purpose and have their own life. So they died in the desert. And the next generation that was raised up learning how to obey God, they were the ones who took the promised land with Joshua. Are you guys seeing the point here? We have to die to our flesh. Now, dying to our flesh, walking in the Spirit, living by the Spirit, and putting to death the deeds of the flesh. It only happens. It says, when you walk according to the Spirit, that's how you put to death the deeds of the flesh. Well, how many years have we been living according to Anamana? How many years? Chad, how many years have you been living according to Anamana?
29 years.
29, 20. What about you, Don?
39.
How about you, Kevin?
40.
I've been doing about, I guess since I was, 40, 50 years.
Since we were kids.
Since we were kids. We do everything according to how we feel and whether or not we want to do it. Now, how long do you think it takes to change a mentality that's based on, I'm going to do whatever I feel like?
Just that much longer.
To undo the grain in your brain. It's literally rewiring the circuits in your brain. You understand how important this is? When God tells us to do something, it's not just so we won't be addicted to drugs, or we won't be addicted to sugar, or we won't be addicted to sex or shopping or whatever it is. It's because we have to be changed. And the giving up of that is just His way, His manner, His method of getting us to where we need to be.
Well, one, I would say it would be safe to say that it would take close to double the time to get you back the way God wanted you to be. One, because He's got to dig up those bad roots, bad seeds.
Yep.
And then sow the new seeds. And then you got to wait for them to flourish.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And some people, it'll get choked out by what? The cares of the world. Mm-hmm. In other words, anamanas. Just because it gets planted in us, a lot of us may have, I didn't, but gone to church as a child, had the seed planted in you, but life was anamana. It never grew. You never became like Christ. There was never any discipline. There was no Shema. There was no listening and obeying. All life has been anamana. God says, enough. Enough with the anamana. Some people of the Israelites who left Egypt, why did they not obey? Some because they didn't trust God, but many simply because they were used to living by their emotions, their feelings, their cravings. Isn't that the word that the Bible used? They died because they gave in to their cravings. What they felt like doing. When push came to shove, whenever they were challenged with not feeling good, they threw up how good it was in Egypt. Remember the land where they were slaves? Had no rights, could be killed whenever Egyptians wanted. That was the better alternative. Discipline would get pushed to the side for cravings. Food, drink, vegetables, spices, fruit. They'd rather have garlic and go back and be a slave than have to deal with doing what they don't want to do. You have a choice. You can go back. They couldn't. They could die in the wilderness, and that's what they did. They died in the wilderness, and that's what will happen to you. If you will not take the Lord's discipline on, you will die in the wilderness. You will never get to the promised land. Scary. But nobody's doing it except us. How many of us actually resort to doing things that will make us worse off and hurt us simply because we do or don't feel like doing something? Right? These are some examples, and this is from me and some people I know. I want to lose weight, but I still want to eat what I want and not exercise. I didn't lose any weight today, so since I feel down, I'll eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's. My weight is causing other health problems, which depress me. So to make me feel better for a little while, I'll eat something that will make me sicker and make me gain more weight in the long run. My sickness is depressing me, so I will eat things that will not make me healthier or smoke things that will make me sicker. My addiction is so hard to control. I'm just going to take a hit or have a sexual encounter or spend some money or smoke something to make me feel better for a little while. I'm so depressed, I'm just going to go to sleep and not deal with any of my issues. All of those are just anamana. I don't feel like it. And you know what? Since we've done it for so long, we don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's normal. God is saying, enough. Pay attention when you say anamana. Because it's killing you and you will die in the desert. You will die miserable, never having gotten the things that you wanted, simply because you refused the Lord's discipline and you wanted to live by how you felt instead of what was right by God. God is saying to us that He is not calling us to break free from our addictions, nor make ourselves feel this way or that way. He is calling us only to listen and obey. And that takes discipline. We must learn to be soldiers to fight against the enemy of our souls and protect ourselves from our flesh. And that takes discipline. He's not even telling us to force ourselves to obey in our own power. He is offering us the grace, the supernatural power, to enable us to respond to Him in obedience. But we have to give up all of our expectations of getting what we want, when we want it, regardless of how we feel. There is no bargaining with God. We have to obey God simply for the sake of loving God and trusting that He knows what He is doing in our life and in the lives of those around us. And that takes discipline. Now, one of the things that's most frustrating about, especially the weight loss journey that I'm on right now, is I'm losing half a pound to a pound a week. I went to dinner with Ronnie and my folks last night, and my mom was looking at Ronnie going, "Have you lost weight? Your stomach seems smaller." And I'm like, make me feel even worse. I'm killing myself to lose weight. Nobody mentions, nobody notices my half a pound I lost. My fifth of a pound I seem to be losing a day. Nobody sees that. No one's going to give me an attaboy. It's barely there. It's imperceptible to the human eye, right? That's how our discipline is. That's what obedience does. It's a long-term process, and the changes are almost imperceptible to other people. They don't know the little tiny victories you're having by going an entire day not living by how you felt. They don't know the victory that you had by not saying out loud what you thought. They don't know the victory, the real victory you had, which after however many months or years, you didn't even have a particular thought at all. That it didn't even cross your mind. There's no glory in that. They don't know that. They're not going to say attaboy about that. Discipline happens in tiny, painfully tiny increments. But it changes you forever. And anamana kills it. Absolutely kills it. In step study, in the action step, it asks, what's the definition of willpower? And if you've got something to write this down, I want you to write it down. Willpower to me means making the decision to, so it starts with making a decision, call upon and surrender to. So I make a decision to call upon and surrender to the power of God's Spirit inside me. I make a decision to call upon and surrender to the power of God's Spirit inside of me in order to obey. Whatever he is leading me to do, whatever he is leading me to do at that moment, making a decision to call upon and surrender to the power of God's Holy Spirit in me in order to obey whatever he is leading me to do at that moment. That's what willpower is. Willpower is not making yourself do something. It is remembering that you can't do it, which is the point of CR, right? And it is remembering and to make the decision to call upon God's power to do whatever he's asking you to do. Does that make sense? That's Christian willpower. No automatic pilot anymore. No checking out emotionally and mentally and just going by what we feel. It is an intentional calling upon the Lord for strength and guidance before we do anything. And that takes discipline. And the enemy of discipline and obedience is anamana. What is it that God's Spirit is leading you to do? What has he been drawing you to do or not do? But you have been responding with anamana. What have you been giving into simply because of your feelings? We've been saying anamana. And God is saying shama. Listen and obey. And that's God's word to me. So, you guys have anything you want to share from your own experience or anything that the Lord taught you or spoke to you during this?
That's good. That answers a lot of questions that I had this week. We got a big job that we're working on right now, and we're having to, perform and do a certain amount of windows per day, but two, we're having to have the guys, I don't want to say beneath, but literally it are, their worker laborers beneath us, we're having to tell them what to do. And when you tell them what to do or how to do, you know, it's always why, and it's like, really? And it raised the question. It's like, you know, and I even went to the Lord with it. I'm like, why do they need to know why? Why can't they just do what we're asking them to do? You know, we're asking them to do something. Just do it, regardless of why. You know, because it needs to be done. Somebody needs to do it, and we can't do it. You know, so that's awesome. You know. All I can say is, wow, mm-hmm. What a sermon. I mean, it ministers right to the heart.
All right, good. Good.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I thought, well, I know he's speaking it to me. I don't know if he's speaking it to anybody else. Anybody else have something you want to share from personal life or anything that God spoke to you? Did God speak to any of you, and you don't have to share it, did God speak to any of you about something you have just been not doing?
Yes.
Because I don't feel like it. Anamana. I don't want to explain it. And it's not like it's an all or nothing thing, meaning that it's everything all at one time. All God's asking you to do is, at that moment, the thing he's leading you to do or asking you not to do, at that moment, the only thing you're responsible to do is obey. Just that moment. Don't worry about if you can obey him again in 10 minutes or in an hour or in a day. Mm-hmm. It is every time you respond in obedience. It's like every day that you work out, the next day you're a little bit stronger, or 2 days later you're a little bit stronger and you can work out a little bit more. It's building up muscle. We are building up our spiritual muscle every time we obey. It's like doing a set of reps. But God is not going to listen to the complaining and the griping and the grumbling. He's not going to give you the answers of why he's asking you to do something. It may have nothing to do with you. It may have to do with somebody else why he's asking you to do something. The same way that what he's doing in my life and the things he's asking for me, when he made it clear it's all about discipline and obedience and not about my weight.
Yeah.
And specifically because he has to change me into the person who will listen and obey in order for me to accomplish the purpose for which he even created me. So the discipline is more important than the weight. But thank you for allowing me to share this, and I pray God is going to do something miraculous in each one of your lives. He's going to, by the power of the Holy Spirit, remind you to call on him to give you the power to surrender to whatever the Lord's asking. Father, I thank you so much for this word. I thank you for chastising me and disciplining me. Thank you for relieving me also from all of the weight I felt to try and make this weight loss happen and for putting my focus in the wrong place. Lord, thank you for being gracious enough to explain something you didn't have to explain to me, because I should have just been obeying instead of asking why and telling you anamana. Father, please take anamana out of my vocabulary. Rebuke me. Point out to me. Make me feel sick to my stomach when my response is, but I don't feel like it. Warn me, Lord God, when I get weak and I'm about to do something just because I feel like it. I want to be the soldier you've called me to be. I want to do what you've called me to do. I want to achieve the purpose for which you created me before I was even in my mother's womb. And I'll lay my life down. I try. I will try, Lord, moment by moment, day by day, to lay my life and my will down and surrender to the leading and the power of your Holy Spirit. And I pray the same thing for everyone else here. In Jesus' name, amen.